UTC right after the international.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I am Shaka Sali. And today, we reflect on the significance of the concept of Pan-Africanism. Joining us are two distinguished guests, Kumba Thule, coordinator for African Rising, based in Dakar, the Senegalese capital, and Mamo Muchi, research professor in innovation studies at Swane University of Technology in Pretoria, South Africa. Kumba and Mamo, I must say that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so much. I am happy and honored to be here.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much also. This is a great opportunity to have a very relevant discussion on where Africa has been and where Africa is going. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Professor Mamo Muchi. Now, Kumba, when we talk about the concept of Pan-Africanism, what would you say is, to the best of your knowledge, the definition of Pan-Africanism?
If I have to say what Pan-Africanism is, from where I'm standing today as a movement coordinator for the Pan-African movement, Africans Rising for Peace, Justice and Dignity, it is a movement for me. Pan-Africanism is a global, it's an international movement that really aims to build solidarity among Africans, not only Africans in the continent, but Africans outside of the continent. And we claim every African, we claim everyone who's of African descent as part of one people with a shared history. We also share many things in the present, and we share a future. So it is a movement, a solidarity movement. It is a resistance movement. It is a movement about justice, so that every African, every person of African descent, wherever they find themselves on the face of the globe, and no matter what the circumstances are that took them there or have them there, that they have a right to dignity. They have a right to joy and to peace. This is how I define it today. At Africans Rising, especially claim those who are rising, those Africans who have that consciousness of justice and are working for that solidarity and for that change.
What about you, Professor Mamo Muchi?
Yes.
What is your definition, or what do you understand by the concept of Pan-Africanism?
What did we Africans face throughout our history? We faced slavery first, then colonialism, then imperialism, and after independence, in the 1960s, neo-colonialism. We have not reached to the stage of post-coloniality yet. When this happened to us, these dangers were imposed on us, they did not divide us in terms of, they just said Africans, they just described us like that. They called us pagans, people who don't know how to know anything, knowledge, many things like that. They rejected us. intellectually the upper class, no experience. So what we need Pan-Africanism is actually for us to actually reject completely this colonial project. The most important one is the Berlin Conference. When the Berlin 84-85 conference happened, what did they do? The Europeans did. Part of us, Spanish. Part of us, Portuguese. Part of us, French. Part of us, German. Part of us, British. Then they also did, part of them, Italian. That's what they tried to do, rejected. What we need is a vision, a mission, an identity project that actually allows us to come together. So what does it mean to be Pan-African? Pan-African must mean, trust me, for Africans to learn, to unite, to trust each other, work with each other, and not to enter into conflict on borders cynically drawn by the colonial powers. That has to be rejected completely. To reject it, we need to unite. If we don't unite, we can't reject the borders. But what have we been doing over these many coups, fighting, conflict, civil wars, many things we have been doing? This has to be rejected completely. If we don't do this, we are not Pan-Africanists. So Pan-Africanism for me is Kwame Nkrumah. Either we unite or we perish. With unity, Africa has a future. Without unity, we always will suffer in a neo-colonial, divided, all right, fighting each other, conflict. That situation is what we're having.
If I heard you correctly then, is it correct that in fact you say that Pan-Africanism was in response to slavery or slave trade and the 1884 Berlin Conference, which was chaired by the German Chancellor Prince Bismarck, without any single African represented on the table?
Absolutely. You're right. We need to reject our past. If we want to know where we want to go, we need to know how we have been going and treated. And that one was negative, and we need to reject it. And the only way we could do it is through our unity. And that unity is what Pan-Africanism means. It means we need to trust each other, work with each other, right?
Yes.
And learn to own our rich resources. That is what Pan-Africanism should provide to us. And once that happens, then we can go ahead.
I see.
I mean, it's not just ideology or anything. It's a reality. It's actually the most powerful weapon Africa has is to unite. But all along, we have not been able to unite. We have leadership crisis, institution crisis, system crisis, governance crisis. We have to be resolved.
Pumba, you talked about how Pan-Africanism, in your view, has people who have a shared history. You're talking about people on the African continent, like where you are, and the African diaspora. If true, do those people also, in your view, have a shared destiny?
Yes, we have a shared destiny. And as it was stated earlier by Professor Omamu, we know that many times the future is born out of the past. We know that we have a shared history. And when I say shared history, we have that shared history that most people know of from our encounter with European and white population. But we also have a shared history that predated that. We have a long, long history of being African before slavery. and have developed many, many engineered, many social ways, economic ways, you name it, artistic ways, spiritual ways of being, that yes, have been shaken and many things have been destroyed over the centuries of slavery, colonization, and post even neo-colonization and imperialism today, but still very resilient, exist under our own nose, that shared history, that we can still unearth and be inspired from to build a new society, not only for Africans, but for the whole world. So we have a shared destiny, and we have a destiny that if we build it, we would be the hope for a world that has an actual destiny. So to me, Pan-Africanism, I'll say it again, is really about the movement of people who are conscious, African people, people of African descent, who are following a line and a thread of resistance. It didn't start today. It started since we had to resist, but we are following that line of resistance and the knowledge that there is a possibility to come back together, to bring together what we have so that we can live, you know, in dignified ways. We have a shared destiny as Africans, and we can build a destiny for a whole world.
Professor Mamo, do you agree with your fellow panelist Kumba that Pan-Africanists, wherever they are, given their shared history, they also have a shared destiny?
We had a shared history.
Yes.
And then from that shared history, we need to develop a shared destiny and a shared future. But on that side, we are very weak. We are not imagining, also we're not also really understanding clearly the knowledge that's needed. And link was the imagination guys synthesize them to be able to shape, design our future, our destiny. That side is weak. The country where I was born, Ethiopia, what don't we have? We have our own alphabet, our own calendar, right? Knowledge on astronomy. There's a book called Abu Shakar, extraordinary, about the planets, even the naming them, all these things. Binary logic mathematics, the mathematical system that we use for this internet world, came from Africa. What pharmaceutical knowledge, traditional medicine. I just don't want to go to all it. The knowledge heritage from Africa is very rich. All right? The struggle heritage is also very rich. The spiritual heritage is very good, rich. The philosophical heritage is very, very rich. The philosophy that will save not only Africa, the whole world comes from us. Ubuntu, math, many, many things, you know. Sankofa, many, many of the extraordinary things that have been created in Africa. What do we do? We Africans do, the current states do. In the education system, it doesn't exist. We don't teach our children. What do our children learn? Foreign stuff. You see, the entire education system needs to be decolonized. Pan-Africanizing it means also changing, bringing back the rich knowledge, the rich spirituality, right? All these things are, and also the rich struggle that we had, for example, we're now celebrating Adwa great African victory. Why are we celebrating 125 years? They said, sincerely speaking, let me just give you this concrete example. The Europeans said the defeat of it's not a defeat of Italy, it's a defeat of Europe. Why did they say it's a defeat of Europe? They said, how can these barbarians, these people who say they're pagans, they don't know anything, how come they have the kind of quality leadership that makes them win? When they don't have army, they don't have weapons, how did they manage to be? They walk on the street, and then they defeated us. How can this happen? How come that these people who don't know anything, they don't have knowledge, can't create it? So it was an intellectual victory. It was a leadership victory. And just a spiritual victory. That's why we call it Adwa. Adwa victory continues as part of the Pan-Africanism.
You keep making references to the Battle of Adwa of 1896. But you do not give us the context in which Adwa becomes very important in African history and therefore in Pan-African history, especially because you are talking about a time when the gallant sons and daughters of Ethiopia defended their territory against the invasion of Italy. So why don't you put in context the Battle of Adwa? I have seen, of course, Sankofa, a film made by your fellow Ethiopian, my friend Haile Gerima.
Haile Gerima, yes.
Put Sankofa in context for our audience. What was the Battle of Adwa really and its Pan-African significance?
I think the Battle of Adwa is extremely significant because all Europeans, let me just give you one just concrete. Look what a French historian on March 4, 1896, said, the Battle of Adwa, and how he linked it to Africa as a whole. The defeat of the Italians by King Menelik is an event which you should keep in your memories, whatever. It is the waking up of Africa to meet what has been hitherto the disdainful seizure by Europeans of these countries, which we call barbarians. It must not be forgotten that in many of these countries now reverted to barbarism, there formerly existed an extremely advanced civilization, and that Ethiopia in particular enjoyed throughout Africa great renown for its refinement and wealth. The defeat of the Italians by Menelik would be remembered in history forever. This victory will arouse the spirit of the Africans, who until today have been treated with contempt as pagans. Menelik's victory is a victory of all of Africa. This kind of commentary is going to be strongly evident in the future. Since it travels fast with the wing of air across the desert, the news is known now from end to end in those African countries. In the future too, since it's known that Africa defeated Europe, it will create a sense of defense and raise the level of consciousness of millions of Africans. It is not comfortable to be happy with the defeat of the Italians. This defeat is ours and that of others. It's a defeat of colonial Europe. And tomorrow's Europe too. You see, how come he actually expressed it as Pan-Africanism? And he's a French historian who's angry that by the defeat of Europe. And he says, it's not just a defeat now, it will be a defeat also tomorrow. Meaning Adwa victory, African, with great African victory continues. Why we say it like that is the following. Please understand me carefully. At the Berlin Conference, when they divided Africa, they allocated, it's the European, the people who were in that meeting that allocated to Italy, this what they now call Horn of Africa, Somalia, Djibouti, Eritrea, now Ethiopia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they allocated it like that. Then when this defeat happened in half a day, it's extraordinary. What did they say? All of Europe, you would not believe it. The President Thabo Mbeki gave a brilliant lecture on the 125, and he covered how the world press covered it. You know what they said? This is a defeat of Europe, and a defeat by Africa over Europe. How can these people who know nothing, and it's also an intellectual victory, they say. It's all, sincerely, they say it like that. Also leadership. How come they have, Africans have this kind of leadership? What will this give big lessons to the rest of Africa to continue to fight? And definitely did.
One could say it was arguably a major psychological blow to the European imperialism.
Yes, very good. Yes, thank you. You put it better.
You're most welcome. Now, Kumba, who are some of the giants of Pan-Africanism when we talk about Pan-Africanism? We know, of course, that there are names like Marcus Garvey. There are names like George Padmore. There are names like Sylvester Williams, Makonnen. There are names like Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois. Who are the others, and especially those from the African continent? Of course, not forget the Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah.
Giants. You know, there are names we know that you can easily find and that at least you can hear from radios and TV. But there are many, 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 I would say, invisible giants. And many of them are women. When we start talking about giants of Pan-Africanism, most of the names that come out are names of men.
Right.
In Senegal here, people will know of maybe Cheikh Diop, and even him. Cheikh Diop, there is a beautiful film called Kemti by Ousmane William, a documentary film that shows really his work, not only as a historian, as a scientific, you know, with datation and the work he's done with reading, the hieroglyphs. But I'd like to name people like André Blouin. I'd like to name people like Awa Keita. I'd like to name Jean-Martin Cissé. And I'd like to challenge those who are listening to us to look and figure out who were the mothers of the independences. To look and find out who were the women who made our struggles possible.
You could also talk about the Senegalese founding president, Leopold Senghor. And what about his contribution to the concept of negritude with people like Aimé Césaire Martinique?
When you talk about Pan-Africanism, again, you have intellectual movements. You have people in schools and universities, and there is a lot of people who shared that time being students together, at least from, if we take it from West Africa, those who were students in France, that the group that worked on the negritude. But you have to also look at cultural movements among artists, yes, writers, musicians. People might remember festival of Black, Festival International in Senegal, the Black Art Festival that was done under Senghor. There are still documents and images of people from all over the diaspora, the Nigerian youths, the musicians, everybody meeting in Dakar. So there has been an artist movement for Pan-Africanism. You also have the political movements. You have the thread of politicians. And again, whether they're female or male, of people who believe in the Pan-African project, of people who did not think that it's about them being a president of a small piece of land somewhere on the continent, but have the profound belief that it would make sense to build unity across the African continent, and in that unity to claim Africans from the diaspora. So yes, we need to take, when we speak of Pan-Africanism, we take account of all of the pieces. Today, the young people who are fighting to change, the currency, like the franc, the CFA franc, in West Africa, I believe, are part of this movement of Pan-Africanism. People today who are fighting against the illicit financial flows, the money that is taken out of Africa to basically leave this continent bleeding, so that if our resources can be used elsewhere. We're not even talking about the past. We're talking about today, what's happening. People who are standing against that, to me, are the Pan-Africanists of today.
If you look at Pan-Africanism today, would you agree that to some degree, one of your compatriots in Senegal, Youssou N'Dou, does in fact contribute to Pan-Africanism using his music?
Yes, I think in the art field, this is where I see even stronger the movement of Pan-Africans. Sometimes in the political field, it's harder. Many of our politicians, many of our presidents on our continent today might be far from Pan-Africanism, or at least they can speak about it, but not really enacting it. But in the art field, we find easier many times, and in all kind of art, whether it's writers, musicians, we talk of Youssou N'Dou, you have Baba Mal, is here. You have so many artists who clearly, if you ask them, they see really the root of Pan-Africanism, and they know that, and they are, that they cannot be limited to the nation states that we have inherited, violent nation states actually that we've inherited from colonialism. Wow. Yes, the artists are the really backbone and the strong vehicle for Pan-Africanism.
Pan-Africanism, in fact, was essentially went home to the African continent where it belonged after the Second World War. And that location was then the Gold Coast, which eventually became Ghana on March 6, 1957, when Nkrumah regained Ghana's political independence from the British.
Absolutely.
And what about what about the significance of the statement made by Kwame Nkrumah, challenging the Ghanaians that the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of the rest of Africa. And he did not simply talk the talk, he actually walked the talk by providing some of the necessary tools so that, in fact, his colleagues in the other parts of the African continent could liberate their nations.
Yes. No, he was amazing. He was a genuine Pan-Africanist. And it's amazing what he said. I just want to tell you what he said when he was going to London, from London to America, Lincoln University. He saw Italians attacked